Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my special guest is author and world traveler Stephen Murray. He was raised in England and raised in, he was born in England, excuse me, and raised in different countries throughout southern Africa. Upon completion of his high school education, he returned to England before moving to California in 1976. He has traveled extensively throughout the world. Stephen owns a computer software company, and apart from traveling and writing, he enjoys theater, concerts, music, reading, and current affairs. Stephen has just completed a sequel to his book, The Chapel of Eternal Love, and the sequel is due to be published before the end of the year, and he's also completed another work of fiction, A Murder Mystery. He makes his home in Las Vegas, Nevada, where he has lived since 2003. And so I'd like to introduce Stephen. Stephen, once again, how are you tonight?
Thank you, David. I'm just fine. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a real pleasure to be joining you.
Well, you're entirely welcome, and it's my pleasure, too. And I'm glad that you were able to contact me, and I've enjoyed taking a look at your book. It's very well written, and it's very heartwarming. And I love a good love story, and you have lots of love stories contained within it. I'm wondering what inspired you to write the book.
Well, David, it's kind of interesting. I suppose behind every story there is a story, and in fact there's a two behind this book, because originally I set out to write a biography on my travels, and I thought I've traveled so many countries, I really wanted to put all the experiences down about all the different cultures and the different people in the different countries and the way they live. And I spent 2 years writing it, and then I tried to get it published, and I didn't know where to start, and I stumbled across a writer's group that I thought would be able to help me. And the guest speaker that night was a publisher, and she said, biographies aren't really selling. If you want to write something that sells, write women's fiction. And I had no idea about women's fiction at all, but I had discovered a real passion for writing, and I thought I really got to do something and try and write women's fiction. I took it as a challenge, but I didn't know what to write about. And I had some visitors from overseas, and they wanted to go to a wedding chapel in Las Vegas, so I took them to one, and there was a couple sitting outside waiting to go in, and we started talking to them. And when I left, I dropped my client and his girlfriend home, and I thought, there's my book, Why Do Couples Come and Get Married in Las Vegas? And why don't they have a big white wedding with all their family and friends? And all the love stories just came flooding into my mind. It was quite an incredible experience. And by the time I got home, the book was virtually written in my mind, and I just went to the computer and put all the outlines for the stories down before they disappeared from my head, my mind. And that's really what inspired the book and how it came to be.
Well, that's an interesting story. It's very sweet, and I'm also amazed that you were able to construct an outline based on all of these inspirations that came to you so suddenly. It sounds like you were just flooded with them.
It really was. My mind was just bursting when I got home, and I was kind of excited about it. And even then, when the book was finished, and it was a challenge. You know, it's not easy for a male to write a woman's a book for women, but it certainly wasn't for me. But I did enjoy the mental challenge and the creative challenge that went along with it. And when I finished, I kind of shelved it in the computer for a couple of years and finished my murder mystery. And that was what I took to get published. And then the company that helps people self-publish their books, they asked if I'd written anything else. And I said, well, I'd written this book about Las Vegas Wedding Chapel. And they pounced on it and said, that's the one you've got to go with. So the murder mystery is still sitting in my computer, and it's like this book was determined to get out somehow or other, and that's how it came to be. It was never planned to be published, but ultimately that's where it went, and I'm truly pleased that it did. It's been a joy to get the responses that I have and the reception it's received. It's been great. Great experience.
Well, if you have written a sequel to it, then I gather that there were many more stories that came to you afterwards.
Well, actually, what was interesting, David, is that each chapter, as you know, it is a specific couple, and the stories take you up to the wedding, the altar at the wedding chapel, and that's basically where it cuts off. It never occurred to me that people might be interested in what happened to the actual couples once they left the altar. And much to my pleasant surprise, that was the reaction I got was, well, you know, what happened to this couple? Did they stay married and did they have kids? And did they go back to, you know, the country where they came from, or did they stay? And they want to know what happened afterwards. And it was very humbling because the people really seem to have identified with a lot of the couples in the books. So the sequel essentially takes place 5 years down the road, and it revisits all the couples who were in the original book. So it's not more stories. It's literally a follow-up of the original.
Well, that makes it much more interesting.
It's like a return to Peyton Place, but much more pure, if you remember Peyton Place.
I love it. Well, how did you ever manage to get into the head of women? You know, you say it's a book that's geared a little bit more towards women. How did you manage to do that?
Well, that was truly a challenge, and there are some characters in the book that were extremely hard and very challenging. I don't know if you read the chapter yet, but there's one where there's a lady of the night, and she's getting a little bit on in years, and her John has basically canned her, and she just suddenly wakes up one morning and looks in the mirror. And she looks at herself and she just wonders, you know, what is going to happen to her? She's got no money and, you know, her life's been a lady of the night and on the street. And she doesn't have many friends. And getting inside of that mind and that thought process is very, well, for me, it was very, very difficult. And I think you really have to dig down inside very deep to see if the emotions are there. I kind of felt like Sybil. I don't know if you ever remember that.
I do.
Book about the young lady that had multiple personalities. Basically, that's kind of what I felt like with all of these characters, because you're digging down inside to see if you can identify in any way, shape, or form with them. And I was aided, I must confess, by being in a writer's group where there was just originally started out with two men and one lady, and it landed up with me just being the only male, and there are five women, and like a thorn amongst the roses. And they were a godsend. You know, they helped me out, and I learned a lot about the female mind, as you said, you know, getting inside the woman's mind. I learned a lot about that, and I think you learn a lot about yourself, too, when you write a book. There's no question about that.
Well, I think the other thing that's interesting, or the thought that just occurred to me, is that we all have positive, we all have masculine and feminine qualities to us if we're going to embrace the totality of our experience. And a lot of people buy into stereotypes and buy into traditional masculine roles, traditional feminine roles, and don't get to experience the whole gamut. Not to say that we as men are going to experience what women do, but there are some emotions that are more aligned or identified with women. So when you say that you got a little more in touch with yourself, would you say it had something to do with that?
Yes, and I would agree with your premise there, David, that I think we all do have all of these feelings. I think we're all born with them, and I think we just either manifest them or suppress them in different ways. And I just think we all do have the same traits. Some of us, we just choose to ignore certain ones, or we push them down and we just ignore them. But I think if everybody really truly looked at themselves and looked inside, as the premise of your whole program is, basically we are all the same. We really are.
Well, a lot of people don't seem to get that and stay locked into shells, identifying with roles, attaching themselves to labels, and not embracing the totality of their human experience. And I imagine for somebody like you that's traveled around the world and seen different cultures, different ways of being, if you will, that you have a broader perspective than many people have, and are able to come to that particular viewpoint as a result of that. Am I guessing correctly?
Yes, I think that's quite true. Having traveled around the world, I found nothing but kindness and goodness in people, and maybe that's because I want to. That's how I choose to see things, perhaps, but I do think basically, you know, we all smile in the same language. We all love in the same language. And we all have hopes and aspirations and dreams. We may hope and dream for different things, but inherently we're still all hoping and dreaming in our own ways, in our own lives. And yes, I think people over the world, they are very much alike.
Well, I think that it's wonderful. Oh, we have a caller on the line, just to let you know. Would you be willing to take a call later in the program?
Oh, absolutely.
I lost my train of thought, so I'm going to ask you, where is the best place for you for people to find your book, which is called The Chapel of Eternal Love, folks? And we're talking with Stephen Murray tonight.
I have a website. It's www.thechapelofeternallove.com. The book is available. It is distributed through Ingram Spark, so people can go into any bookstore, and even if it's not stocked there, they can go into their local bookstore, and it is in Barnes & Noble or any bookshop's computer, and they can certainly order it, and they would get it in a couple of days. They can also order it through Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. And my website does have a mailing address. They can just mail it to the publishing company, and I will send them a signed copy if they want. And certainly if they put a little note in by sending a check to the publisher's address, if they put a note in that they heard about the book through Different Strokes for Different Folks, they get a 20% discount for your listeners, if anybody chooses to go that route.
Very kind.
And if they'd want an autographed copy, if they will just have to say who they would like it inscribed to, and I'd be more than happy to sign it and inscribe it with any personal messages they wanted. For the holidays coming up, if people just want a fun read, that's what it is. It's a feel-good book. It's very clean. It's very pure. And it really is. It's just about love. Planning on trying to get people to think of Las Vegas as a city of love as opposed to Sin City.
Well,
but like one salmon flowing upstream.
Well, based on what you were saying to me earlier about your experience in Las Vegas, it sounds like it's a very loving city. And that panned out to be my experience when I was visiting there. The people were very friendly and very happy with their time living in the city, and none of them expressed any desire to live anywhere other than Las Vegas. And I think that's a very interesting thing to say, and not too many people feel that way about the areas that they live in these days, for whatever reason.
Yes, that could well be true. It's not for everyone, I suppose, but I guess that's why we have menus in restaurants, you know, so that people can pick up what they like and what they don't like. But there is something very unique about Las Vegas, probably because it is perceived as being Sin City, and it really isn't. I'm probably going to upset a lot of lots of casinos and what have you by saying that, but I really don't think it is. It's, of course, it's in here, I suppose, but there is anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just nice. There's the glamour and the glitz, but also you can get away from it. You know, we live about 10 miles from the Strip, so we're not involved in that 24-hour razzmatazz, but it's there if we want to go and put the shows in the fine dining restaurants, what have you.
You know, I remembered what I was going to comment on earlier, and you were talking about how you see the best in people, and you referred to that as perhaps a choice that you make. And I think that that's a very interesting statement, because so many people don't realize that they choose their own realities through their perceptions and through their attitudes and beliefs. And I think that that speaks of staying on a very positive track and seeing the best in people. And I certainly take the position that when we focus on what's the best in people, we also tend to affirm what's best within ourselves. And when we focus on negative things, we're really looking at the shadow side of ourselves, or the side of ourselves that maybe we aren't aware of and should be taking a look at. What do you think about that?
I think that's a very accurate statement and perception, David. I truly do. Most mornings, I have a business partner, and when I go into the office every morning, and I say, you know, I'm a little bit groggy in the mornings, I'm not a morning person, and I'll go into the office and ask him how he is, and every day he'll say, you know, I woke up, I've got a roof over my head and food on the table, and I've got friends and family who love me, and everything else is gravy. And he's absolutely right, of course. It's all in perspective. And, you know, we just have so much to be thankful for and to be grateful for. and we really are truly blessed, I think, just living in America. I think
yes,
we're
indeed,
very, very
we are.
Blessed.
I had a number of people on this program who have talked about the importance of gratitude. In fact, I interviewed a gentleman last night, an author, who's written a book based on the wisdom of Walt Disney called The Wisdom of Walt. And he comes at life from a theological perspective. He teaches at a Baptist university. But he talked mm-hmm. about how important it was to maintain an attitude of gratitude. And I maintain that that is a foundation from which all blessings tend to flow, that the more that we focus on to be grateful for, the more that we tend to attract things to be grateful for. What do you think about that?
I think that's also very profound and very true. One would like to think that it's obvious and apparent, but it isn't always. And I think that the people in our lives, too, are true blessings. You know, the people that have come into our lives, and they're here for a reason. And I don't think we should ever underestimate our friends, particularly because they've chosen to be part of our lives, and they've chosen us to be part of their journey as well. And that's a great compliment when somebody says, hey, I want you to be part of my life's journey, and you share all their joys and their sorrows and what have you. It's a privilege and it's an honor. And I think we should always be thankful for that as well.
I totally agree. And I think we come back again to that word choice and how important that is in terms of shaping our destiny. We do have some power over the shape of our lives, the shape that our lives takes. And one of the ways that we can do that is to surround ourselves by people who believe in us and affirm us and treat us with kindness and respect as we hopefully will extend to them. And the more that we do that, as I see it, the more we can make the world a better place. And I loved what you said about things happening for a reason or people coming into our lives for a reason. They do shape our lives. And beyond that, I believe that everything in this life has a purpose and happens for a reason. What do you think about that?
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I think we're all here also to give really of ourselves, you know, what we have to give back. You know, I came to America. I only knew one person, and I came with two suitcases and $500. That was it. But I had a job to come to, and I just started here with basically nothing and knowing nobody. And it's been a wonderful period of my life, that the people that I've met and the support and encouragement and all the people that have helped along the way, certainly couldn't have done it by myself. You know, we're all links in a chain, and the more links there are, the stronger the chain becomes.
Very true. Let's talk a little bit about your journey, and then we'll get back to the book again, because there are more questions I'd like to ask you about that. You were born in England and lived through most of your childhood in southern Africa. Would you tell us a little bit what that was like for you?
It was a very interesting childhood, David, because we left England when I was 7 years old, and it was a very different world back then. It took my father almost 3 days to get to Salisbury, in what was then Southern Rhodesia. Well, now you can fly around the world in less than 24 hours, but in those days it was a whole different ball game. And we followed with my mother, my family, with my brother and my sister and myself. We took the ship from Southampton in England down to Cape Town in South Africa. And then it was a two-day train trip, a steam train, up to Salisbury, Rhodesia. And it was very primitive and very colonial. But those were in the days it was part of the British Commonwealth, and they were encouraging people. You know, it was a few years after World War II, and they were encouraging people to go to help develop the African countries. And we didn't know any different. We just assumed that this was what other people did. And it was a very, very different life, David. It just was. And we went to boarding school, which I wasn't too happy about, but that's what we had to do. Looking back, it was a great, great life, and it was a wonderful 12 years I spent there. I still have family that live in Africa. I couldn't go back to live there, but I certainly loved the experience growing up. It was, you know, England, it was always raining and cold and damp and wet, and it was just wonderful having that outdoor life in Africa. You know, it was very sunshiny and outdoors, and it was a very healthy life, very, very healthy life.
It sounds like it was a very happy life, but it was too.
It was, but I needed to go back to England. I guess I felt a need to go back to the mother country back at the time. And I went back to England, and it was in the late 60s, and that was a fun time to be in London, you know, the swinging 60s, albeit it was towards the end of the 60s. It was still a fun time to be in London. But then, of course, I got the chance to come to America. You never know what's around the corner. And here it's a very, very different way of life, but an exciting and a good one nonetheless. It's the whole life has been a true blessing with the places that I've been able to visit and travel to, and the opportunities that have come my way. It's been wonderful.
What brought you to America?
Well, I worked with somebody in England, and the same company, a computer company, and she got the opportunity to come over to California to a job. And a couple of years later, I just got a little bit tired, I suppose, of the weather in London. And it was at the time when everyone always seemed to be on strike. And I was trying to buy a house, and it just got so difficult. And then she wrote and said that they were looking for people in the company she was working for, and would I be interested? And of course, I just couldn't resist the opportunity. You know, when you're living in that cold, rainy weather, and you get the chance to come to Los Angeles and the palm trees and the sunshine and the ocean, I mean, it's just too much of an opportunity to pass. So
I just
threw caution to the wind and packed the bags and came. And I must say, incidentally, you know, everyone advised me against it. They said, gosh, you know, this is just a quantum leap. You're just packing up. What if you don't like it? You might not like the people, so on and so forth. And I just thought, hey, you know, cast caution to the wind, and fools rush in where wise men fear to tread. And that's what I did. But as it happened, it panned out very, very well, and I never looked back. Not at all.
And what drew you to Las Vegas?
Well, you know, living in Los Angeles, it was great when I first got there, and I never thought I would ever want to leave. But, you know, it just became so crowded. And we were spending, my business partner, myself, in like 3 to 4 hours every day in traffic just getting to and from our clients. And so the quality of life was going down, and of course the high taxation certainly didn't help. And we just thought, you know, maybe the time had come to move the business out of state. And we still have some of our clients in California, but we thought, well, let's just go and have a little look around and We had some friends who moved to Las Vegas, and they suggested we come look at some houses, and we just stumbled across a dream home, and that was it. And we thought, let's just, again, cast caution to the wind and let the chips fall where they may. No progress is ever made by the doubters, David. I'm sure you know that.
No progress is made by what, did you say?
By the doubters.
I'm not sure.
Any progress in life if you doubt every step of the way.
Oh, the doubters. Oh, absolutely not. No, I certainly know what you mean. again, that comes back to creating our own reality, if you will. And, a life based on faith instead of doubt moves us in a forward direction. And when we doubt and have fears, then we tend to not move in a forward direction. And, it's amazing what a life built on faith can do for people. And when they leave behind that shadow of doubt and move in a positive direction for themselves by believing in themselves and believing in something greater than themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, absolutely.
So you believe in love, obviously, to have written such a marvelous story. Can you tell us some of the stories that are in the book?
Yes, sure. It's quite a potpourri of stories. I alluded to one story earlier where there's the lady of the night who's a bit of a lost soul, and by happenstance she falls for another lost soul, and the two of them just get to know each other, and they fall in love. And there's another couple of opposing faiths, and it was written slightly tongue-in-cheek. It's a Catholic man who falls for a Jewish lady, and they both fall for each other, and both their sets of parents are adamantly opposed to the mixed-faith marriage, but they decide they're going to go ahead and get married anyway. So there's a marriage of mixed faith. And there's a story of a single lady who is an anti-war activist. She loses her brother in the Iraqi war, and her brother became befriended over in Iraq, a single guy. And the guy and their brother's sister start corresponding. And the veteran who's serving in Iraq, he really believes in his cause, and she's adamantly opposed to it. And they write back and forth, and over a period of time, their disagreements, their love forms beyond their disagreements. But it starts out with the mutual love and affection for the brother, the deceased brother. So that's quite an interesting chapter, story about a couple who meet through a Harley Davidson. They both have troubled backgrounds, and that they meet through a Harley Davidson club and decide to travel across the country. And as they travel across the country, they find themselves falling in love, which they never thought they would do because they had such troubled backgrounds. Then there's another couple that are elderly, and they've both been married for 50 years to their respective partners, and they lose their loved ones. And they're very lonely, and they just happen to meet up in the cemetery as they're there paying their respects to their respective spouses. And they start talking, and then they start going out. And obviously theirs isn't a passionate love affair, but their love is based out of a mutual loneliness and understanding, if you will, of the other person's sadness and grief. And they come together. So there's quite a potpourri. And there are a couple of humorous chapters. There's a chapter with where twin men fall in love with twin females. They meet at a square dance club, and the two guys fall in love with the two ladies, and that's just to add a little bit of light fare. And there's another story that involves a lady that comes up. She's married. She lives in South America, and her husband needs eye surgery, and she can't afford it, and she thinks that the streets of America are paved with gold. And she comes into the country illegally, and she's taken advantage of course, and she's asked to do all kinds of demeaning things, and it's the extent she goes through just really for the love of her husband, even to the point of marrying somebody else so she can get a decent job to earn some money and become a legally employed person where she wouldn't be so abused or taken advantage of. So there are a series of different chapters in the book.
Well, I'll look forward to reading
different aspects of love. But, you know, again, people marry for different reasons. But fundamentally, it's all really love. It just shows itself in different ways to different people. And it means different things to different people. But it's the foundation is really love. It's not a romance book. I think there's a difference, don't you, David, between romance and love?
Yes, I do. I mean, love at its most basic level is like an agape form of love, love for our fellow man and woman. And, I have a healer that comes on my show. Her name is Ada Marie, and she's a channeler, and she talks about how love is the greatest part of the fabric that keeps us all together. And of course, it speaks to that in the Bible. I'm trying to think of that famous scripture that talks about love, faith, and I don't remember what the other quality is, but the greatest of them all is love.
That charity, isn't it? Love, faith, and charity?
I believe that is it. And I'm not sure if that comes from Corinthians or Proverbs or where it comes from. But
I think it's Corinthians, but I'm not an expert on the Bible. I'm sorry to say.
Well, I'm not either by a long shot.
I think it is Corinthians.
I'm not either by a long shot. But I do believe that we need more love in this world if we're ever going to find peace. And hopefully we'll find that in our lifetimes. More and more people are coming around to the belief that that can happen. And it starts with our relations with our fellow people, you know, how we we model love within our lives and stay out of that place of ego and follow our spirits instead of comparing ourselves to others and saying, I'm right and you're wrong. What would you have to say about that?
Yes, I'm finding it very hard to disagree with you tonight, David, on a lot of these issues. I think you're very right, and the channeler or faith healer that comes on your program, I believe he or she's also absolutely correct as well. I think it's all very, very true.
Well, I'd be interested in hearing a little bit more about your travels and where else you've been in the world, what other places have inspired you, what other countries you've been to.
I think the one, David, that probably really I think was a game changer, if you will, is we went to Bhutan up in the Himalayas. And that's a very, very different country and a very, very different way of life. it's predominantly Buddhists, and it's not an easy country to get into. They really keep tourism down to a minimum, and they're just very loving and giving people. And their life, you know, Bhutan was blocked off from the outside world for so many years because they wanted to keep their culture to themselves and not be too influenced by the ways of the outside world. But it's just a very, very charming, it's a beautiful country in and of itself. The scenery and everything is just so beautiful, but it's such a serene, peaceful country. And I think Buddhists, I think, are inherently, I'm not a practicing Buddhist myself, but I think they're just basically very caring people, much more, I think, than, you know, the average person. Their philosophy is really sort of giving and sharing, and they're just very, very beautiful people, and the Bhutanese people. So that was a terrific country and a very, very different one to visit. And I think the other couple of places that really impressed me was Machu Picchu down in Peru.
I'd love to go there.
Oh, it's just absolutely incredible. And the nearest town is a 3-hour train ride away, or the nearest real town, I suppose. And there's one hotel that's right on the top of Machu Picchu, the village there. And we were very, very fortunate to actually stay there overnight. And there's something very spiritual and very moving about being there right at the top of the Andes after everybody else has left for the day and caught the train back to Cusco. Just staying there and just sitting in the park and watching the sun go down over the mountains. And again, it was one of the rare occasions where I did get up very early in the morning and go out and watch the sun rise up over the Andes. And there was just some very spiritual and mystical feeling. It's very hard to describe, but it was a very, very amazing place to visit. And I think the Galapagos Islands, I think too, that's also a very amazing place because of all the animals and the wildlife, and because they're all they're not brought in from anywhere. They're all on the floating islands there. And they're not shot or hunted or anything. They don't really know any fear. So when you're out swimming in the waters, it's not uncommon for seals to come up and rub themselves against you, or the birds are sitting in the path and you can sort of stoop down and they don't go flying off because they don't have that fear. So that's an amazing place if, you know, for nature and just for the love of the animal kingdom. An incredible place to go and visit.
Well, all of
those
places,
are certainly some of the different ones.
All of those places that you spoke of speak to me of places that are filled with natural wonders, and where one can actually detach from things of this world, as the Buddhists you talked about tend to do. They're very good at letting go of the external and in so doing, giving more freely of themselves without any attachment. And I find that for me, getting in touch with nature is awe-inspiring and creates such a feeling of serenity within me. That it sounds like that was your experience in those places as well.
Very, very much so. Very much so. And if that's what people are seeking, I mean, obviously, if you're looking for fantastic nightlife, those certainly aren't the places to go to, that's for sure. But if you're looking to get away from it all, to recharge your batteries, and you appreciate nature and countryside and scenery and something tranquil and peaceful where you can collect your thoughts and rearrange your priorities in life, I suppose, there's certainly perfect places to go to. No question about it. No question.
Well, switching gears, just to remind listeners or anybody that's just tuned in, we're talking tonight with Stephen Murray, who's the author of The Chapter of Eternal Love, and the sequel is due out before the end of the year. What is the name of the sequel going to be, Stephen?
It's going to be very simple. It's just going to be called Return to the Chapel of Eternal Love.
Ah, yes, you did mention that earlier. And
because
what are your plans?
People will be returning back.
And what are your plans for your murder mystery?
Well, no, that, as I said, that was kind of shelved when I got involved in marketing The Chapel of Eternal Love, and now it's got put on the back burner yet again with the other book coming out. So, as I said, I wonder whether this book, The Chapel of Eternal Love, with those weren't stories that were meant to come out just because of the accident, the way the book came into being, just in the development. And then, again, it was never intended to be published, and then it was published, and I thought, fine, you know, now I can get on with my murder mysteries, and then people wanted a sequel, so it's really kind of taken on a life of its own. And but I still hope to get my murder mystery to this.
Do you think it's possible?
The returns come out.
Do you think it's possible that the sequel to The Chapel of Eternal Love would beget yet another sequel?
I don't know, David. That's an interesting point because, as I said, when the book was first written and I took all the couples, you know, where they came from and how they met, it's a How We Met kind of book. And once they got to the actual altar to get married, that's where the story's finished. And it didn't occur to me that anybody would be interested to find out what happened to them afterwards. And when you're writing, it is a novel, and the stories in a way do link themselves through, you know, Rosemary, who's the wedding organizer and the chapel mainstay, and her little dog. But when you're trying to come up with a story that is where each story is different and create characters that people care about in so few pages, that's a challenge in and of itself. And I thought, you know, that would be, if people just like the stories, that would be it. It never occurred to me that people would want to know what happened to them afterwards. So that was another very fun challenge, incidentally, you know, because it was never planned. And then it's like, gosh, where have all these characters gone? Where do they go? And what did happen to them? And so that was another very interesting challenge to come up with follow-up stories for all of them. And it's amazing how creative one can get when one lets the imagination loose. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what the feedback on this is when it's released, whether people will then want to know where these people are in 10 years' time or what's happened, whether they'll be satisfied with what I've produced as to where these people's lives have taken them. But again, most of them are just a little bit of an insight, I suppose. If people are thinking there's going to be sort of heavy sadness and divorce in many of the chapters or any of the chapters, I can give a little bit of a hint that, again, it's going to be of a similar nature. It's going to be mainly positive and upbeat. There will be a couple of sadder chapters, naturally, but that's life, unfortunately, but ultimately it will still, each of the chapter will ultimately have an uplifting ending, an uplifting ending.
Well, I wondered if...
I want people to feel good when they read it, you know. I think it's perfect bedtime reading, if you will, that people can read a chapter and hopefully put the book down women go to sleep feeling good about themselves and about life. Mm. Don't want them to go to bed and fall asleep feeling depressed or anything like that. So, as I said, it's mainly a feel-good book.
That's great. I was going to ask you if you would talk a little bit about your own creative process and what your writing regimen is like. I don't know if you write every day or how you manage with your business to find time to write.
Yes, I'm an kind of an unorthodox writer. I've been to sort of listen to various authors' panels, and I hear these authors that wake up at like 2 o'clock in the morning and they dash their computer and everything starts coming tumbling out and they write for hours. And I think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not like that at all. I tend to be more of a disciplined writer, and I have to write when time permits. So I try to write at least every Saturday afternoon or Sunday, but I know what I'm going to write about. I know the chapter in my mind. But as I'm going out and about, David, if I'm driving down to the bank or to the supermarket, as I'm going around, the conversations of the people are formulating in my mind, and what's going to go where, it's all formulating in my mind. So when I actually sit down, it's relatively easy to write because it's kind of formulated in my head. But again, the interesting thing about the original chapter of Eternal Love is when I wrote that, it was quite uncanny because the stories were formulating in my mind. But when I sat down every Saturday afternoon, I was disciplined that every Saturday I would write a chapter. And it was almost like I was possessed. It was almost like somebody was taking over the keyboard and that the fingers couldn't type fast enough. And I finished typing and I was exhausted and I printed out and there were all kinds of typing errors. But it was almost like somebody else was taking over the keyboard. And then inside, even some of the dialogue, I'd have these phrases in my mind, and as I typed them in, it was almost like somebody was saying, no, she wouldn't say that. No way would she say that. She would say this, and I'd have to go back and backspace it all out. So sometimes I'd want to develop the characters one way, but something inside is saying, no, she wouldn't say this, or he wouldn't do that, or don't be silly. They would never think that. And I'd have to go back and change because of what the gut or somebody inside was telling me to write differently. And always say go with instinct, you know, go with your gut.
Yeah.
Go wrong.
Did you ever think earlier in your life that you would write a book?
No, not at all. And again, it's I'm sure you've discovered in your own life that sometimes life does throw you some curves. And writing was a curve, and even how I came to write the biography, which triggered off this whole writing path, was uncanny in and of itself. I just happened to be sitting having coffee one lunchtime in this restaurant, and the waitress was just this very bubbly and effervescent person. She was just rushing around these tables, and she was so happy and chirpy. And she was very young, and I was just observing her, and I thought, boy, I wonder why she's so happy. What's she got to be so happy about? And I thought, I wonder how different her life has been from mine and what her background is. And I just started thinking about that, and I thought, I really should put some of my stories down on the travels because I'm sure this is where my difference has been. And that's, I went home and just started outlining the biography of the travels, but that was just purely on the observation of a waitress in a restaurant. And I went back a few months later and she was no longer there. Bless her heart, she'll never, ever know that her waiting in the restaurant the impact, the long-term impact on my life it's had. And it's amazing how sometimes those little events and little happenings, you don't realize just alter the course of your life in a way. And writing certainly altered the course of mine. And just the people one, certainly at book signings, when you're writing a book about, like, Las Vegas Wedding Chapel, a lot of people come up and they'll say, oh, I got married at Las Vegas Wedding Chapel. And they'll tell you their whole life story. And it's just interesting listening to these people, and especially if their marriage has lasted, and they're very happy about it. Of course, it's not so pleasant when they say, well, the marriage didn't last at all. We were divorced 2 weeks later. That's not quite so happy, but you know, that's life.
Well, what you were saying about that waitress just reminded me of the interconnectedness of us all. And before we go, I'm wondering what words of encouragement you might have to people that have an idea that they'd like to write a book and have never gone about that.
Well, I'd say go for it. It's very, very easy to... It can seem very overwhelming and intimidating, and especially when you go to get it published and you don't know where to go and getting it copyrighted, and then how do you market it and get the name out of there. It can all seem a little bit intimidating, but just go with it. Go for the flow, and it's very rewarding. You learn, not necessarily financially, but it's rewarding in other ways. As I said, just the people you meet and you stumble across, and it's just a very wonderful experience. And I think you learn a lot about yourself. I think you grow as a person. I certainly have. And I would just say, really go for it. Just put that pen to paper and just start cracking. And if it's meant to be, it will find a way out there. It will find a way. And just believe in yourself and believe in the product.
That sounds like great advice, Stephen. Well, the hour's gone quickly.
Did that caller, did we lose that caller?
We did lose the caller, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, not to worry. That does happen. I would have brought her or him on the line earlier if that had been the case, but... We were talking.
Well, if they're still listening, they can. If they go to the website, there is an email address, and I do respond to all the emails that people send. It doesn't go to a secretary or anybody like that, and I do respond to them. And if they say there was a call with a call for different strokes for different folks, I'll
and then to let
respond.
You know, most people listen to the show on the podcast, so. You know, there will be a lot that will listen to the show after the fact. And the only callers that come into the queue are the ones that press 1. So that's not to say that there aren't other people listening right now. Indeed, there probably are many listening right now. But I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me tonight and share a bit of your own story and talking about your book. It's been a joy to have you on the program.
Oh, David, it's been my pleasure, and I hope your listeners have enjoyed it as much as I did, and I thank you for the opportunity to chat with you, and I wish you much success with your program and your future path, wherever it leads you. I just hope it brings you much happiness and success.
I appreciate that. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have spiritual experience if we allow it to be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks to find common ground and take it to the next level here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.
Also listen to the broadcast on blogtalkradio.com and freespiritbroadcasting.com. And the shows are now every Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and Friday at 7:30 Eastern U.S. time. Good night and God bless.